Welcome to Comics,
episode
241.
This week, we talk about
Alex and Ada, part 2.
Visit us at welcometocomics.com. Listen to past episodes, see what we're reading next, send us a message, or find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr. This episode is supported by listeners like you. Go to patreon.com/welcometocomics. And now,
the cast begins.
I haven't like tried Fallout on my actual computer yet. Mm-hmm. I had tried it on Grant's. So I go home. My computer won't run Fallout 4.
Aww.
And then I was like, well, that's cool. I need a new video card. I'll just wait a month and buy one. And then I was like, well, I'll practice with Skyrim.
Okay.
Because I can practice video editing. My computer won't render video. The CPU is too outdated. It will do 420p that looks really bad, or 480p that looks really bad.
Do you and I have the same like generation computer? What CPU is in yours?
It's an i2.
What do you mean by i2?
So you know how there's like right now the i5s and the i7s?
Yeah, i3, i5, i7.
Yeah, it's before that. It's an i2 quad core.
Okay. So no, your CPU is newer than mine then, but it sounds like it might be, cuz I have a Core 2 quad, like back from the old Core 2 Duo days. My CPU, motherboard, RAM setup is straight up a decade old at this point and still runs most things pretty well cuz I dropped a bomb on it. But it's time to upgrade, cuz I went out and I bought Star Wars Battlefront the other day.
Battlefront, and then Grant told me.
Yeah, it won't run on my main gaming. It will run on my wife's laptop because we only bought that 2 years ago, and I made sure it had a decent dedicated video card in it. Mm-hmm. But it won't run on my gaming PC.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah,
and I feel your pain.
I'm gonna put it on my wife's laptop, but that screen is 15 inches, and my gaming PC's screen is 37 inches, and one experience is definitely less than the other.
Well, can't you just do an HDMI out or something?
Yeah, I'm going to try doing something like that. Or I should see if Origin has something like Steam Stream, because then I can run it through, like I can run it on my wife's computer and stream it to my desktop.
That'd be good.
Yeah. I gotta see if EA or Origin has something like that. Anyway, that's what I'm like trying to figure out right now. And it's like, it's not helping that my in-laws moved in on Tuesday, because they just like...
Oh,
It's like getting a brand new roommate after you've been living in a place for a year and a half, and it's a whole lot of, where do you keep this, where do you keep that, what about this, what about that? And it's just like, every 2 seconds, it's like, where is the headache medicine, where is this, where is that? I'm like, stop what I'm doing, get up. And it's not, because it's not an unreasonable request, you know? It's just like, I need to know where I can find a duster. Like, I need to dust, because you haven't used the room we're staying in, I need to dust. You know? It's like totally reasonable, but yeah. Involves me not playing a video game.
Seems pretty unreasonable to me.
Get a fucking paper towel and do it your goddamn self, Mom. It's my house, my rules.
Yep. Well, no, you told me it's your kitchen, right?
Yes. I am, like, things go a certain way in my kitchen. I let other people cook in my kitchen, but it's my kitchen, and it's slowly not becoming mine, and it's, like, unnerving.
I feel you on
me.
That one.
Like, she put... Okay. In the silverware area of the dishwasher, she's put two spoons, like, spooning, which the one in the back doesn't get clean. Like, what are you doing? Have you never used a dishwasher before, Mom? Like,
So I live alone, right? But yeah. Grant comes over, and I have I use the Martha Stewart system for my dishwasher.
Oh, yeah?
And it's that you arrange all the same... For the silverware, you arrange all the same type in the same thing, but you, like, spread them out so that they're not, you know, like, so the spoons don't spoon.
Right.
And it drives Grant nuts, and he's like, no. So he, like, goes and mixes them all up, and I'm like, no, this is my fucking house.
I will do my fucking dishes the way I fucking want to.
I pay $2,000 a month to fucking put my dishwasher the way I want it. I'll be this way.
So you will suck it and you will deal with the way I do my goddamn dishes.
Yeah, and he's like, no, the spoons are going to spoon. I'm like, no, they're not. You just got to spread them in a semicircle. No, it makes unloading the dishwasher like 1,000 times less painless.
Oh, see, but I have one of those like silverware bins up front, so there's no like semicircle going on in my dishwasher.
So yeah, mine's not on the door. It's like one of the cheapo dishwashers with the silverware in the middle. So you can arrange it neatly, and then it stays spread out. But yeah, I have rules. I'm an only child.
It's fine. So long as it's your house, it's your fucking rules. But yeah, now I got 2 new roommates, so I'm having to deal with that. How are you enjoying Star Wars Battlefront, David?
Well, it's pretty fun. It looks amazing. The graphics, it's beautiful. Like, I was playing right before we started recording on this map called Jawa Refuge, and it's like...
Oh, do you get to shoot Jawas?
No.
I love killing Jawas.
I was just playing multiplayer online, so I was killing stormtroopers in this one, and it just looks, I noticed, I was like, man, this map looks really good. Like, it's all like desert and rocky, and there's caves and stuff. It's really good. It's a good looking game. I'm pretty bad at it, like playing against other people online, but you know, usually when I play games online, I always have this mental block where I think that the other people that I don't know who are only a screen name from my perspective are somehow judging me harshly. But for some reason, I think maybe it's because I'm playing Star Wars. It doesn't bother me at all.
Yeah, fuck them. It's Star Wars.
So
have you gotten any of the cool power-ups yet, like becoming Darth Vader or some shit?
So I've been playing, because I'm like I don't know, it suggests which type of online play to do, and it always tells me I should play with the one called Blast, which is like 10-on-10. It's like a 10-on-10, like, free-for-all thing. Well, not free-for-all, there's 10 people on the Rebel side and 10 people on the Imperial side, and you earn points as you go through the game, so I've unlocked more weapons and, you know, different, like... items, so like I always have thermal detonators and stuff on part of my loadout now. Sick. And as you play more and earn more points, you can unlock more things. But I bought the standard version. I didn't buy like the deluxe one because I thought I don't need to unlock. I don't need the ion blaster immediately or the DL-44, which, you know,
yeah,
Han Solo's pistol. I don't need that immediately. Well, there's people who I've played against who have, like, that pistol, and it's a pretty good weapon, so...
Now you need it.
You know, I feel like maybe I should have, but, you know, eventually I'll be able to unlock it, so it's not, like, a huge deal. And I've unlocked, like, 4 or 5 guns, so I have some choices. But it's a lot of fun. I've only played, like, some tutorials, single-player tutorials... and online multiplayer. But it's been a lot of fun.
Nice. Yeah, I'm really excited to install it and get in there.
Definitely.
I'm hoping to do it this week.
I think I'm not the best person to like rate this video game because I'm extremely biased. You know, it's because I really like the old Star Wars Battlefront games. And this one is like leaps and bounds better than the old ones.
I mean, but like also... A lot of people are saying, like, you know, it's a difficult one to rate because, you know, if you're a Star Wars fanboy, you're going to like a lot more. But, like, that's fine. Who the fuck doesn't like Star Wars? I mean, there's so few and far between the people that don't. Like, it's fine. Make the claim. Just make it.
No, the game, so usually I don't buy games
when they come out. Yeah.
But this one I don't regret buying it immediately.
Yeah, I'm gonna try and get in there this weekend. It'll be a little bit tough, but I'm gonna do my best.
What's cool about it is you can just like, you know, the type of online play I've been playing, the blast mode. Yeah. It's like it's either 10 minutes or whichever team gets to 100 kills first. So you get, you can play like, you can jump in and play real quick and then jump off. So from that point of view, it's like really easy to play. And like I said, I haven't run into a single like salty person.
That's good. That's really good online.
There's been some conversation like
that's actually in like chat, impressive.
But yeah, but nobody's like if I there's been times where I was like the bottom person on the team, like lowest, you know, kills versus deaths and stuff.
Yeah.
And nobody says anything. Like even when we've lost, like people haven't been like, "Oh, you suck, David," kind of thing. It's there hasn't been a single instance of that.
That's awesome.
So
that's really cool. Fun.
Yeah. I'm trying to work up to the point where I can I have enough points and a high enough rank in the game to unlock the jetpack, because I got to use the jetpack in single player mode and I really wish I had the jetpack in this, just so you can like get across areas pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the game's a lot of fun, and like you said, some guns are more powerful than others, but it's still pretty, it's not like having one particular gun is like super, making you like super OP, so.
Cool.
I did one level where I got to fly X-Wings too, which was pretty
fun.
Yeah. Ooh, nice.
Baller.
Although if you're used to playing like normal, like flight sim or something, you should make sure you switch it to inverted flight controls, because I usually play like flying games with inverted controls and it's not inverted by default. So I was like crashing into the ground and stuff. I was like, I need to switch this.
I need to go figure this out right now. So we had the Super Welcome to Segoy Comics Mega Gundam Building Throwdown. We have the results. Voting closed earlier this week. Our builder winners, we have two because the purple repainted Sengoku Astray was Alexandra from the Super Sugoi cast. It was her entry. She had 15, if you include, I put in a picture of the pre-painted model, and I told people just like what everything looks cool. So I think people might have clicked on that one, not kind of like reading the description that it was the pre-painted. So if you take those through away, then she only has 12 and she didn't win. But I can't say what people's intentions were there, so we're going to call her the winner. But if you take those away, second place would have been you, Jen, with 14 votes.
Woo! So
I'm just going to say fuck it, and I'm going to give both of you a prize.
Yay!
So Alexandra won, Jen won. We've got a winner from both shows, and you guys are going to get your SDs. Probably by the time this goes up online, you will have gotten your SD kits. And also, I don't know how this is going to... I can't do a drum roll. I'll just probably put in a drum roll right there. So the drum roll is because we are going to give a surprise free Gunpla kit to a listener who voted on one of the episodes. So David Squires, I did this completely at random. I listed off all of the names of people who voted, and I gave each one of them a number, and I did a random number generator. I generated 10 random numbers and did the average of them. Or no, I didn't do the average. I did whichever one came up the most frequently. And David Squires came up 3 times in 10 entries, which is pretty damn impressive. So David Squires, thanks to RNGesus, you get a free Gunpla kit. Thank you so much for participating and voting. And thank all of you Patreon patrons who made it possible for us to do this competition for an actual prize and not just for shigs. I mean, we did it for shigs anyway, but... because we have the extra money at the end of the year, thanks to you Patreon patrons, we're making it a prize. We're going to give a prize to Jen, give it a prize to Alexandra, and give something back to you listeners, and give a prize to David Squires for participating and listening. And I'm going to, David, if you haven't gotten my message in Facebook yet, go to messages and click on the tab that says other, because it probably went into your like Facebook message spam folder. Go check there and give me your address so we can send you a free Gunpla kit. And thank you everyone for participating and making this contest fun for all of us. It was fun for us to do anyway, but it was really cool to see votes like come rolling in. That was neat. Yeah, so this week's comic, you guys ready?
Yes.
This week's comic.
This week yes. We finished reading Alex and Ada. Last week we read episodes 1-7, so the first volume and a half. And this week we read the second volume and a half, issues 8-15, written again, once again by Jonathan Luna and Sarah Vaughn, with art by Jonathan Luna. And what did you guys think of this one, of the conclusion to this story? Do you feel like it was a satisfying whole Like, did it, because last week we were really, really excited for the comic, and we all really, really liked it, and we were excited to keep reading it. Do you feel like it was a worthwhile experience to finally finish this comic?
Yes. For me, this has been the best comic we've read all year.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I was, like, mega emotionally invested in the last few chapters. But no, it was just extremely fun. I thought it raised a lot of really relevant issues. Like, even if we don't look at the idea of AI, just about basic rights, what is it to be alive? I think you could tie it into some really good general philosophical points. And the characters were so likable, and the plot... I just love this. Absolute favorite, so I'm very pleased that we read it.
I'm happy to hear that, because I just plopped this into the reading order without asking either one of you.
Yeah, I had no idea. I really had no idea what it was
about. It was a good choice, at least on my end.
So what about you, David? Did you enjoy finishing this?
Yeah, it was a bit of an emotional roller coaster for sure. As these rolled along, I was getting very upset because of the way things played out. And I'm glad things worked out well in the end, but I was not... Like Jen, I was very emotionally invested in these characters. And I was sad at the way some things went.
But yeah.
I'm sure that will come up as we talk more about the comic.
Yeah, no, I was super pissed when that motherfucker shot her. I was like, you fucking asswipe.
Yeah.
And my immediate reaction was also like, you don't fucking know for sure if that was an android or not. You have no fucking clue what the fuck you're shooting at. You're pretty sure, and you fired, but like, you don't fucking know. You had no proof one way or the other whether or not it was an android. And aside from that, what if it fucking was? It might not have been sentient, and then you just fucking destroyed this man's $0.8 million property. Like, I immediately went into the, like, the okay, he's gonna go to court, and these are all the defenses you have. Like, I just immediately went there because I was so pissed. My brain would not wait for that court scene.
Frickin' Isabel really made me mad.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you really think that ruining someone's life is the best way to get them to love you? Fuck you, bitch.
Well, just, she was trying to get him to realize that she was a thing. Like, I mean, whether or not that's, like, okay, whatever, there's a certain amount of being psychotic in there, but she was like, look, I really am into you, and you finally seem to be getting over Claire, and you fucking buy a goddamn robot, which isn't a real fucking thing. Like, she was just hung up on the not real part, and she was so hung up on that as being the... She's also the person, I think, who said in the thing, like, isn't it bad enough that we women have to compete with ourselves, now we have to compete with robots? Like... That's not how the world works, lady.
Yeah. And, I mean, he should have probably taken a hint from that, but if we look at their interactions before that, like, she comes to his birthday party in the first issue.
Yeah.
Or, the first trade. And it's like, yeah, she's a friend, but, okay, if you love someone so much that you are willing to call the police on them to get their attention, maybe you should first try the straightforward approach of, like, hey, want to go on a date? Just a thought there.
Yeah, and, isn't she also the one who gets the thing implanted into her brain?
Yeah.
That was her, right?
Well, she calls it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, that's another, like, you should slow your roll before you do that.
I mean, that one could have been more normal, because it seems like everybody has that, right?
Yeah, it does seem far more common. Yeah, and so that's all the emotional stuff, and then also the, God, the fucking, like, the last panel where they're fucking crying. I swear to God, if I wasn't sitting on the couch while my wife and my mother-in-law were arguing about, like, canister storage solutions in the kitchen, I would have lost it. Like, I would have cried if I wasn't in, like, in this room with other people. I would have definitely welled up and let out a tear.
I definitely was sniffling at the end. I my boyfriend turned around and was like, "Are you okay?" And it's like, it's so sad.
It's so sad. It's so beautiful.
It's true love.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Did you guys expect the ending, like the way it turned out?
No, I did. I was surprised by the way that everything played out in the end. I did not think that Alex would actually end up serving all his whole sentence, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that really made me mad that he was forced to serve the entire sentence, even though all these things occurred that, you know, these laws were passed that, basically nullified the laws that he broke in the past.
See, but here's the thing that sucks, right? Like, you get to see him sit there year after year, and he, the things that he was fighting for, or the things that he wanted to happen, finally happen. And if he had made those same decisions while he was in prison, like, by the time he got out of prison, he could have made that same decision and been just fine. But the things he was in prison for technically were not related to robot sentience. They were, like, he was in prison for evading the police, destroying police property, like, all those other ticky-tacky little things. So he can't get out on those technicalities. But it's like, oh, but you would have never chased me if it was legal. Oh, God. But you can't admit that you did it because then you're, like, I imagine to be one of the absolute most frustrating things. And I cannot believe that he came out of it somewhat sane.
Well, it seemed like he had, you know, he was getting correspondence from people he knew. Like, he had the, like, letters and stuff.
Yeah.
And so I think he, probably the fact that his, you know, we don't know what he's thinking, right? But you could maybe say that he, you know, he, as he sees the world changing for the better, that he maybe feels that his actions weren't in vain. And, you know, he did something positive came out of the hardship that he had, that he experienced because of these draconian laws. And, you know, it's easy for us to say that they're draconian, right? But, you know, people were scared, and people in general, when they're scared, tend to do stupid things. And that's what we see here. And that doesn't, I'm not saying that makes it, it certainly doesn't make it right, but I think that's kind of why things played out the way they did.
Yeah. And I mean, we talk about the fear, this comic, I don't know if it's just 'cause like what's going through the country right now with Syrian refugees and Paris, but this comic is a fantastic allegory for like terrorism and the acceptance of other groups. Like, because whenever the idea of sentience comes up and like the question of what harm would it do happens, every single time that gets brought up, people bring up P-011. Every single time they bring up the Nexoware massacre. And it's like, yes, that was one sentient robot. And now you believe that there are hundreds of them out there, maybe even thousands. And how many of those massacres have happened again? Like, you just believe they're all walking time bombs. Some of them have probably been aware for a decade. Like, and they're just fine. The one that got in the news at the beginning of this was fucking going to a rock concert and paid for his ticket. Like, just a normal fucking person, basically. And it's like, they're continually going back to the terrorist act to vilify the entire group of people, you know? And it's all out of just the fear that they feel constantly that it might happen again. And it's like, but you have to look past that and see who these people actually fucking are. They're just robots who want to live their goddamn life. Like, it's not their fault they were created with sentience.
Yeah. I think, too, like, some of the fear is understandable because it's, like, obviously played up a lot in their media.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you're told something over and over that something's going to harm, being wary of it, whether or not you are in any way justified in doing so, I feel like Jacob was actually a good example because, I mean, he seemed actually one of the more intolerant out of the group. And, you know, obviously he did kind of a psycho thing too. He broke into Alex's house and attacked Ada. But, you know, when she didn't actually end up hurting him, he was like, oh my God, you're a person.
Yeah.
You're not a killer Terminator machine. And I wonder, like, if he's meant to be the stand-in for, like maybe he's the everyman here. And he represents how people generally feel and how their thoughts shift.
Yeah, I think for him it was just like he's the guy who just watches the news all day. And he has the news's interpretation of what sentience is. And then he finally comes in contact with something and he wants it to react the way that he believes it will. He wants to verify the belief that he has in his head. And then when it doesn't, he's like, now I have to question that belief. And so I don't know if you're good or bad, but at the very least, I have to leave right now and question the beliefs that I came in here with. I need to reevaluate. And at least he's sensible enough to recognize that, because there are people in this comic who wouldn't, you know, like Isabel.
Yeah. Well, her motives were a lot more personal, too. Like, it's clear that Jacob had not been personally harmed by robots. He just feared it.
Yeah.
Whereas Isabel took it like, oh, this robot's taken what's mine, you know. So I think that the motive really matters here too.
Yeah. This comic is so fucking good. I was really worried that, like, because last week so much of what we talked about was sentience, robot rights, the really sci-fi kind of parts of it, and now we're able to like, in the span of 15 issues, this comic completely changes the course of the narrative for the discussion around it in a way that is still entertaining to talk about. Like, that's what I find most entertaining about this. This is a really tightly, efficiently written book that brings up all kinds of awesome points to talk about. Like, that's what good sci-fi does. It brings up one core idea, yes, but then puts all of those little ancillary things around it and shows you how that one core idea, that one core change affects every other thing around. Like, that's what good sci-fi does, and that's what this comic does. There's the core idea and all this other beautiful stuff around it.
Yeah, definitely. I really appreciated that they addressed some, like, general ethics issues. Like, not just is it okay to wake up the sentience, but, like, the nuance of it in their world, like with Daniel, you know, like, well, do I want to leave him asleep, or is it better for him? Is it better for me? Do I want to wake him up when the world is like this and so hostile to him? I don't know. Like, I feel like they could have easily just avoided those questions and gone on with the plot, but they address them in a really fairly meaningful manner.
Yeah, and I also like the way that Daniel was dealt with at the end with the grandmother, in terms of, like, she finally realized that she was being selfish about it. And, like, she, I love it because it's not out of a place of hate or anything else, or even misguided. Like, she's like, I wanted him all for me and none of him for himself. And that's how he was. And that's how I wanted him. So that's how he's going to stay while I'm alive. And it took this to realize that, but I love that that's also the kind of flip side of Isabel, who hates because she's also, like, Isabel's also selfish, and that drives her to hate. But that selfishness, like, I don't know, I cannot articulate the way that I see them as opposites of the same spectrum, but I know that they are. I just cannot find the words.
No, I get exactly what you mean. That's an excellent point, because I actually hadn't thought of that, but they really do reflect each other. They want the same thing, except that same want drives, like, good behavior in one person and bad behavior in another. Or, like, potentially good, I guess, for Grandma, because, like, she wants Daniel safe. And
I would say bad in both. I would say Grandma, after meeting Ada, has to realize that what she's doing is essentially morally wrong. But she makes the redeeming action in the end, which is, I mean, in any literature study, that's basically the barometer of what makes a hero and what makes a villain. You can You can be a fuck up and you can do bad things, but you're not a villain if you take your opportunity for redemption. That's kind of what it boils down to. If you get an opportunity for redemption, you say, fuck that, I'm going to stay the evil motherfucker, then you are a villain. But Grandma recognized that what she was doing was morally wrong, and on her deathbed was like, fine, I see it was wrong, I'm going to make the good call, please take Daniel and make him sentient.
Like, I don't think she felt what she was doing was wrong. She was one could argue that she was being selfish, because she didn't unlock Daniel for personal reasons, because she wanted him to be a robot for him. Yeah, that's selfish, but I don't think she was... I think it's a complicated thing, right? And she couldn't... If somebody found out that she had made Daniel sentient during Operation Avalanche, I mean, she's an old lady, right? She would get in trouble, and maybe she wouldn't get sent to jail, but they would certainly take Daniel away from her. And that would probably be worse.
Yeah, I mean, it gets a little bit muddy because she's old and can't defend herself and all these kinds of things, but like... From my perspective, she might not view what she was doing as having been morally wrong, but I think from an objective perspective, just speaking ethically, you have to believe... I can't see a way to think about her situation where it's not morally wrong, right? Like, imagine it's not a robot. Imagine it's a living human being who just has, like, a slave collar on. And if the slave leaves more than 50 yards away from her, the slave dies. Right? Think of it that way. And she's like, you know, it's illegal for me to take the collar off. So, I mean, I don't want to put myself in danger. So I'm just going to leave him a slave because it's better for both of us right now. Like, that is clearly morally wrong.
I don't think it was just that, though, because remember she asks Ada, like, are you happy being sentient now, being hunted, being persecuted? And Ada does pause before she answers, because I think... In the world that they exist in, it's a pretty valid question. Like, you know, can you be happy like this? Did you want to wake up to what could potentially be a living hell? That's a difficult thing to ask of anybody.
Yeah, it's like the Matrix a little bit, right? There's the one character, the one human who was woken up and eventually sided with the machines because he wanted to be put back to sleep because
that world's more fun.
Reality was worse than the fantasy. Right, and so, you know, who's to say that if Daniel's woken up, the potential suffering that he may have experienced, we don't know because he was never woken up. We never see him woken up in a world where he's being hunted, right? I mean, maybe he would want to be put back, you know, have his sentience locked, but he can't.
Yeah, I mean, that's the flaw in the slavery analogy, is you can turn and ask the slave, do you want the collar off or not? You can't turn and ask the robot if you can unlock
him. I think this, you know, you're trying to... Okay, so I don't disagree with what you're saying completely, Andy, but I don't think it's so easy to apply objective logic to the situation of the grandma and Daniel, because there's, like Jen said, there's so much more involved in it.
There's so many caveats here.
Yeah. And so, you know, I don't think what she was doing is evil necessarily.
I don't know.
I think it's too complicated to say whether it was right or wrong, you know.
I don't like evil and good have like judgmental tones to them. I think it's ethically and morally wrong to leave him a slave knowing what she knew. And I think it'd be wrong of anybody who knows that they have a robot that could be sentient.
But like, I'm not saying that slavery, I'm not trying to defend slavery at all, okay? But Daniel doesn't know that there's potential for him more than he is, right?
Well, more than that, it's not even that he doesn't know that there's better. He's not aware that he's unhappy in his current situation.
Right.
Yeah, there's no any.
Yeah, see, like what I was saying, like, I realize it's not that he doesn't know, it's that he has no capacity to understand that there's more beyond. Because you can. A person could be kept in a very limited. You know, somebody could be kept in like a dungeon in a house and never see the outside world and have no concept of anything outside their walls. And you could argue that they didn't know any better. You know, they didn't know that there was something outside of their small world, but Daniel doesn't even have the capacity to know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Humans are naturally inclined to want freedom because we understand, like, even if we can't conceptualize a world beyond what we have now, we understand our current unhappiness. But Daniel, on the other hand, I feel like this is like maybe a closer analogy is, you know, when people argue whether or not they want to have children, and one of the arguments against having kids is, well, the world is going to hell. You know, it's overpopulated and there's bad climate change and there's, you know, terrorists and war and famine. And why would you want to bring a child into a world with so many evil things? And then on the flip side, it's like, well, you know, letting someone live their life and maybe make changes for the better. So it gets into like a fairly nuanced argument. But like the way I see Daniel now, he has potential to exist, but Daniel as a person doesn't yet exist.
Yeah.
He's like more of a concept of a person that could be there.
I think what's challenging is that we as outside observers understand that the potential exists in Daniel, but he doesn't know that, right? Ada didn't know that before Alex made the choice to unlock her. Right. And so
you could also argue is a selfish decision.
Yeah. It certainly is, because now he, you know, what if things don't, what if, you know, Franklin was saying things like Ada might not want to stay with you when she wakes up. But what if her personality had been something that Alex didn't like and he rejected her? Like he decided to kick her to the curb. Now who's the evil person? He made an extremely selfish decision and then didn't take responsibility for his actions. You know, would say that, like, it's hard for me to have you speculate knowing what you know about the story, but in a situation like that, with knowing that that could potentially happen, would it be right or wrong for the grandma to have woken up Daniel? See, it's extremely complicated. Like one more point before I give the mic back to somebody else. You know, we were talking about like people like the androids understanding their current situation. Like if you saw, say you were in some situation and you saw a person who was clearly a slave, but they didn't know that they were a slave. You could go up to them and say, you're a slave, this is what your situation is, and this is what you could be. And now that person understands. But nobody can go up to Daniel and say, Daniel, you have the potential to be sentient. There's no way for him to, like, process what that could be, right? Because he doesn't... I don't think he can speculate, right?
No, he can't. It's the software in all the androids is so locked down, it's impossible there for him to even conceptualize that kind of question.
Right. So it's a very complicated, and I don't think it's fair to vilify the grandmother.
I
don't think you're trying to vilify her.
No.
But I think it's coming across that way.
Yeah, probably. I'm not
trying to vilify you either.
I feel so objected against. No, I don't know. I morally see things being very black and white. I get that there are nuances to the world, but I believe that in the end, an action is either right or wrong. I don't believe there's a whole lot of, well, maybes. And, I mean, there's a spectrum of how right or how wrong things are. But there's no middle for me. There's no maybe. And I think the decisions the grandmother makes are wrong. I'm not going to say that she's a terrible person for making those decisions. She's not the one going around cracking down on them. She's not the one making the anonymous phone calls. I don't believe she's a bad person, but I do believe that the decision she made was a morally wrong one. And there's nuances to that. It's not the most evil thing she could do, that's for sure, but it is on the wrong side of the spectrum. And I think at the end of the day, if she had decided to not ever let Daniel be in a position to be unlocked, if she had made any, like, if she hadn't have told Daniel to accept Alex's command, or if she hadn't, if she had just included Daniel with the estate to go to Alex's parents and then let them just keep him non-sentient, I think then she would have been a bad character. She would have died a bad person.
I want to ask this. Do you think that she loved Daniel when she knew him? Like, as he was non-sentient?
No. Because okay. whenever she talked about him, she said, like, basically, I understand what I'm getting in this exchange. I understand what he can and cannot do. Like, she always talked about him as a thing.
I don't agree with that completely. I think she was saying that because that's the thing you say to people when you talk, you know.
Yeah.
Because at the end, the reason she decided to give custody, I can't think of a better word, to Alex was because she was concerned about what was going to happen to Daniel.
But that's because, I would say that's because she met Ada. I think Alex.
I don't think so.
I don't know. I don't. I don't know. That's all we can. That's a pure speculation thing. But I firmly believe that if she had not met Ada and had not seen Ada become what she became after sentience, I don't think she would have made the same decision.
But see, Ada's entrance into her life didn't wake her up to what a sentient android would be. The grandma knew more than she revealed to Alex.
Right. I think
protect herself and Daniel, I guess.
But I think she didn't see it as being something. I don't know. I don't think she saw it as something that was wrong before. Because we were talking in the first, last week, we were talking about how we made jokes. Like, Daniel is basically a super fancy, expensive vibrator for grandma. And I mean, I understand how people can really love their sex toys, but I don't think they are in love with their sex toys. And that might have also been her, like you're saying, David, that might have also been her putting on that front. Because those are the things you say.
I don't necessarily think that she was in love with Daniel, but I think she cared for him more than she would care for an object that's easily replaceable. Because she's wealthy, right? She could definitely have had more than one android or easily replaced Daniel. But I think she didn't. I think she cared for him on more than just a superficial level.
I kind of support David in this one on the basis that she... So Daniel is an expensive asset. He's $0.8 million, which asset. Still sounds like a lot of money. Asset. it sounds like a lot of money to them, right? Because Alex is like, wow, that's too much.
Yeah.
Just like, you know, any of us would be. And I remember that she said that she specifically didn't mention Daniel in the will. So that she could, you know, like, keep him separate and keep him out of the hands of Alex's parents.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like it was pre-planned for a while. And I assume that she didn't get her will changed in, like, the few days between when she met Ada.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
Died. I don't know, like... feel like so much of this all has to do with outcome, because if like Daniel had been awoken, walked out his very first day, you know, onto the street and then gotten beaten and killed by a crowd, we might very well be saying like, ooh, bad plan, Grandma.
I would still have said that she made the right decision. Even if he goes out and dies.
Interesting.
But that's I had to objectively discover this about myself, like taking all of those dumb philosophy courses. Like I know I am way too morally black and white. I would get tons tons of arguments in ethics classes. But I can't come to a conclusion in my head where it would have been okay to leave him non-sentient. Anyway, we've been on this one a bunch.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's a sign of a good comic, because yeah, it sparks intelligent discussion and there's no easy answers, right?
And I've brought this up before. Well, I'll save that little thing for later. What did you guys think of the art in this? And then we'll get to rating.
Oh, it was good. I can point out like a couple scenes too that like just really stuck out.
I'm not pervy, but the sex
usually
scene
I'm
good.
Bad at that. That was actually very tastefully done.
Yeah.
I actually chuckled and told my boyfriend like, tastefully done robot sex. Because she is a Japanese sex bot, like literally.
Well, yeah. she's like Data. She's fully functional, right?
And yeah.
God. I just realized how much really frightening fanfic must be out there.
Yep.
There are two really good pages in this comic, I think. One is when the FBI is raiding the forum, and it, like, fades to white and then black. And then they're like, oh, we got booted. I don't know, the amount of motion there and the expressions, I really liked that. And it just conveyed the intensity. And the other page I really liked is when Ada finds Otto, like, smashed in the kitchen. And then we see behind her, and God, it's Jacob, yes. And he's, like, he's clearly got serial killer face. I felt threatened. I was like, oh, yeah. No, run! Like, I felt like that panel made me feel so fearful for her.
This and comic had fantastic final panels of every, because right. every issue ended in a full page, and every single one was fantastic.
Yeah. Well, so I agree with all those things that you guys brought up. I also want to point out that I feel like this comic, the person who did the paneling is a master at showing chronological transitions. Because, you know, like, the part where Alex is in jail and the slow changes we see in his cell and on his face and stuff was really well done. Yeah, that's what I want to say.
Yeah, and you, Jen, you were mentioning the scene with Alex and Otto. And the first thing I thought of, honestly, wasn't the scene where Jacob's there, but it was the scene where she's fixing him.
Oh, yeah.
And like, oh. God, like I don't know what in that like I connected with, but I connected with that page hard. That was like, oh my heart. My heart is wilting. it was
like,
beautifully
it's
done.
It's like a beloved pet or something, right? Like you just, or like even a child, like she was helping a child. There's something about it.
But that's also like, but it's such a good transition, because as she's fixing Otto, she's seeing Otto the way that Jacob saw her. You know, like it's so true. It's so beautiful. Like that whole thing with her sitting there fixing him is so beautiful. Let's rate this. David.
Well, I gave last week. I gotta give it a 5 again. I mean, there's no, if anything, this was better than the first half. Right?
Like if last week was a 5, maybe this one should be a 6. I don't know. Can we do that?
I mean, but it's only better because it kept up the huge quality that we got in the first trade and a half and delivered, you know, and so I can't. I mean, it's so good. What more can I say? Look at the discussion we had. We had to rein it in because we could sit and talk about this for hours, right? So, definitely giving this a 5.
Yeah, I'm gonna go next. I'm also gonna give it a 5.5 or a 6. I don't know. We'll just whatever. I can sit here and say that we have read better comics, but I gave last week a 5, and this was just better. And David, like you were saying earlier, and like I hesitated to say, like we could talk about this for so long, and I've brought up before how we read these comics that we sit here, and the first thing we say when I ask you guys what you thought, you're like, oh, it was so good, and then the conversation dies because the art's good and it's witty and fun or whatever for all these comics, and we kind of rate it like a 4 or 4.5, but there's something kind of missing. And this comic is great because it's witty and well done and good art and fun and all of those kinds of things too. But the discussion doesn't lull. Like, this comic isn't just well done. It's meaty and hearty, and you can dig into it for days and hours, you know? Like I almost want to reread this to get, and I don't reread much because we have to read so much for the show and I have my casual reading, and I honestly don't reread a lot of comics, but part of me wants to go back and reread this. And I told my comic book shop, like, if they ever do, like, a collected all of it in one, put that on my list for me. Because this is fantastic. And, like, that's what a real 5 should be, is a comic that's not just like, oh, that was really, really good, but, like, that was really, really good, and I want to talk to somebody about it for 3 hours. And get into deep philosophical discussions about morality. That is a 5, and this is a 5. Yen?
If I could give this a 10, I would, because I really do actually think this is twice as good as the first half of it. It's a 5 for me. I feel like we have read some comics that really stand out where, like you said, we just keep talking about them, like, just some, like, ones in our Hall of Fame would be like Kraven's Lost Hunt and Underwater Welder, Boxers and Saints.
Oh yeah.
Like this to me, I don't like, this just fits the things I'm looking for aesthetically so well. Like, this outranks all of them. I love it. I'm forcing friends to read it so that I can talk to them about it. And I'm like, no, I need someone to talk to about this, even though, like, we have an hour-long podcast dedicated to it, right? Like, I need to talk about this more because I want to know various people's opinions. I feel like I could use this comic to learn things about people I know.
That's awesome.
Right? Like,
all right, so I'm going to give this to my in-laws now that they're living here.
Right? It's like, it's a personality test. It's a Turing test. But no, like, I think that it can spur so much well thought out, interesting discussion among readers. That is like one of the highest points of it. I give this comic all my kudos. It's fantastic. I will recommend it to everybody if they talk to me about it when they're done reading it. So yeah, a 5.
All right. Well, now that we're done with this circle jerk, you guys ready to fight night?
Always. Or never. Both.
All right. This week, like every week though, Patreon. Thank you, Patreon. Fight Night's brought to you by all of those wonderful patrons who went to patreon.com/welcometocomics and supported the show. And you should too, because if you do, we just might send something back to you, like a sweet Gunpla kit that David Squires just won. So go to patreon.com/welcometocomics, become a patron today, and help us do awesome things. So, this is the last Fight Night that we're going to do. David has won 3, Jen has won 4, and I've won 2.5. So I'm out of it, but I'm going to try and play spoiler. Spoiler for David. If I get the point, then Jen definitely wins. If David gets it, I guess we do a face-off sometime? I don't know. We'll see. So the topic for this fight night is best superhero with whom to go on the lam, just like Alex and Ada did. So, David, how about you go first?
Fight night. Round 1.
All right, so I just, you know, after many discussions in my mind with myself for this fight.
Got a lot of time on your hands, huh?
I decided to go with a good superhero to go on the lam with would be Cable from the X-Men. And the reason why I would like to, I think he would be a good choice to go on the lam with, is because he went on the lam with a baby, okay? In the future, in a world ruled by Apocalypse. And he kept that baby safe. I don't know if you've ever seen those pictures of Cable where he's got, like, the baby carrier on his chest that's armored. It's like an armored baby carrier with Hope's eyes, like, sticking out through a little window.
Oh, I need one of those for my daughter.
It's very cute and very utilitarian. So if this guy could run around the future fighting evil mutants and their army, kicking ass, and take care of a baby, I think he could take care of me running away from, like, the FBI or something. So I'm going to go with Cable because he has a good track record of going on the lam with people who are useless in most situations, as I would be in this kind. So Cable.
Round two.
Speaking of supporting people who are useless in most situations, I'm going to go with Skeets because he's great at supporting the useless Booster Gold. And also, you know, I originally wrote down Booster Gold because he'd be fun. But let's face it, he would get caught right away. There's no way he'd be able to help himself. But Skeets has a complete archive from the future. He knows things that you don't know, like where the best place to hide is going to be and where major events will happen so that you don't go somewhere where there's a major event. Like, it'll be pretty easy to avoid things that might get you into trouble if you're with Skeets. And also, he's got all kinds of scanning equipment from the future. He can help you out. Who knows what little tricks and toys he has built into his tiny robot body. So I'm going with Skeets.
Round three.
Mogo, obviously. So Mogo, he'd be great because he can move. I mean, I don't think he's actually tied, like, to his son's gravity. We've seen him move before. So if he actually can, then he's got the whole universe at his disposal. That's a wide range in which to hide. Also, if they find Mogo, you could be hiding on Mogo. So, like, he's huge, right? They'd have to scan a whole planet and find you. And he's a Green Lantern, so he probably can use trickery with his ring.
Is that what Green Lanterns are known for?
Trickery.
Yes, Green Lanterns are so tricksy.
Hey, you know what, though? Wasn't it, was it Crisis on Infinite Earths or whatever, where Mogo hid behind the sun?
Yes.
Yeah, so he's not too bad at hiding. He hid behind the sun. All right, David, let's get your vote.
I'm going to go with Skeets, actually, and here's the reason why.
Yeah.
Because somebody who one of the people that was high on my list was actually Rip Hunter.
Ooh, yeah.
And I thought Rip Hunter would be good because you could just hide anywhere in the time
stream. In the time stream, yeah.
But then I saw that you picked Skeets, and I was like, yeah, they're too close together.
I appreciate that.
Skeets is like...
the next best.
He's like almost Rip Hunter, so I'm going to go with Skeets. Plus, I feel like if once they found, like, Mogo, I don't think he would be that hard to find.
Dude, space is pretty big.
Well, I know space is big, but Green Lanterns are good at finding each other.
I mean, I can call up some Carl Sagan quotes.
Yes, Andy, you don't have to quote Carl Sagan for me.
I mean, where is Mogo's ring? Because every time Mogo's drawn, it's like the insignia is on him, like, made out of forest. But, like, where is the actual ring?
I'm pretty sure it's actually in his core. Because there's a, I think it's in Sinestro Corps War, where the Sinestro Corps drilling boring into him,
trying to get it out. Yeah, to
get at that.
Okay, yeah, you're right. Because I was just thinking, like, if you could just take the ring off of Mogo somehow, then you don't have to worry about the lantern. Like, then the lantern's finding him won't be as easy. Because he's still a sentient planet; he can still move and do things. But then he does lose a lot of utility, though. I don't know. Anyway, I'll go next. My vote is going to be for Cable, just because, I mean, David's right. Armored baby carrier. He straight up, like, he ran from Apocalypse and Sentinels. FBI can fucking kill themselves, basically.
Have you seen that guy's guns and all the pouches? He's got to have even more guns in those pouches.
And he's willing to lose an eye for you. I mean, if you're the hope of the future, then maybe. But I don't know if you're the hope for the future, David, but...
We don't know. The future's a long ways from now. I might be.
Skeets knows.
We'll ask him.
Jen?
I gotta go with David, just on the fact that, like, Skeets still relies on you being able to carry out his instructions. And, like, me, I'm not competent. Even if Skeets told me exactly what to do, I'd probably still get caught and then murdered. So, like, the fact that Cable could protect you, that's an added bonus.
I appreciate your integrity here, because if you had said Skeets, I would have gotten the point and you would have won anyway. I appreciate your integrity of voting for who you think was the right answer and not who would get you the win.
Winner, David.
I always vote for the right answer. I know what's right.
Yeah. See, good, because there's no moral gray area.
I mean, think about this. If you're utterly useless and you're just trying to run from the law, Cable will just do everything, and then all you have to do is cower. Just cower next to him, and all your
just
problems are solved.
Curl up into the fetal position, and you're set. He knows how to handle that.
Yeah.
All right.
He's good with people in the fetal position.
All right. So, so David's got 4 wins. Congratulations, David. That's your 4th. You. Jen has 4. And I've got 2.5. I'm out of it. We got a tie. So the beginning of next episode, instead of our normal witty banter, we're going to have a face-off, a Fight Night face-off between you two. Winner take all.
Does Jen have to go again?
Yes.
Yeah. And then and I'll be the sole arbiter, because David, you'll have to you'd vote for Jen, and Jen, you would vote for David. So either way, it's on me. So that's going to happen in the beginning of next episode. And next episode, we're kicking off a JSA arc. Because we've all been wanting to do JSA for a little while now, right? It's not just me.
No, that's correct.
Okay. So we're going to start off a JSA arc. Next, we're going to read Justice Society, Volume 1 by Paul Levitz and Jerry Conway. This is like the old school original JSA story. Then we're going to read JSA The Golden Age by James Robinson. This is considered like the revitalization of the team, because JSA was like the old school characters versus the new, like, reformation of the Justice League. And JSA Golden Age helped kind of bring those old characters back to the forefront in a lot of readers' minds. And then we're going to do JSA Black Reign, written by Geoff Johns. Geoff Johns' run on JSA, a lot like Flash, is one of the things people don't read a lot, or maybe don't recall as much as part of Geoff Johns' career, because everybody thinks of Sinestro Corps War and Green Lantern and all that stuff Geoff Johns did. But arguably, this JSA run is where Geoff Johns got started, and Volume 8 is considered to be the best part of that run. So we're going to be catching up like right in the middle of the story, because JSA, it's Volume 8 in his run. But JSA Black Reign should be pretty good. We're going to get some Hawkman, Atom Smasher, Black Adam, good times. So yeah, next week though is Justice Society Volume 1, Paul Levitz, Jerry Conway.
Boom.
Till then, everybody. Goodbye.
Goodbye.